Welcome to the big interview on the April 16th edition of Money Life. Joining me now, Gabe Diedrich. He is portfolio manager at Baird. If you want to learn more about the firm, it is bairdassetmanagement.com. And if you are looking for stuff on fixed income and the credit markets, definitely a place you want to go to look for commentaries and more. Gabe Diedrich, thanks so much for joining me on Money Life.
Thanks for having me today, Chuck.
Let's start with talk that was front and center for any investor just a little while ago. Then we get war breaking out in Iran, and now it's been tabled and backburnered, which is, what's your take on the interest rate picture? I mean, we've got a Fed that is clearly facing the rock and the hard place pretty close at hand on either side. So what is happening with interest rates, and how has the bond market reacted and the credit markets reacted as we've seen the expectations change a little bit for what the Fed's going to do?
Well, the expectations certainly are changing, and I think there's still a lot for the Fed to watch. If you think about Kevin Warsh, he's sitting in a chair interviewing for a job to be the head of the Fed and the Fed chair. In his vantage point at that time, you had a labor market that was finally starting to show some cooling after being resilient for so long. You know, this was a backdrop where maybe the Fed could provide more easing and it could lower its short-term interest rates. And that was really a prevailing wind, I think, that permeated through discussions about the Fed and what the next step could look like. The economy was pretty good. I think the economy has been showing itself to be extremely resilient as well. If you think about AI spending and some of the data centers, there's been a lot going on domestically that's kept the economy chugging right along. You are right, though. It certainly did change when Iran came into the picture. That adds new wrinkles for the Fed, principally what happens with inflation. And that inflation story, I think, has started to overwhelm what was previously more of a labor story and what was happening with the U.S. economy independently.
Does that mean the Fed doesn't move? Does that mean that the Fed is starting to look at when they might hike as a move? I mean, none of those things actually feel good to a public that's like, all I want the Fed to do is cut.
Yeah, and the Fed, I think, has wanted to cut, potentially. I think the everyday citizen, and certainly the administration in Washington, has been hoping and looking for the Fed to cut and for easier money to be available. And still, the Fed has been patient. The market has anticipated more cuts than the Fed has been able to deliver. And not only that, with some of the recent shifts with the Iran news and what's happened with energy prices, the market has kind of come towards the fact that, to your point, there could be a hike. What the Fed is likely to do in here, though, and I think what they've communicated to investors, is we need to wait. There's so much uncertainty right now, and the availability of data just isn't there to make that next decision. So there's no harm in waiting. The labor market is still good, but not overly robust. The economy is good, but it's not too hot or too cold right now. And that gives the Fed time to wait for that additional data to make, hopefully, the best policy choice it can at that time. Obviously, we've got a nomination coming up for Kevin Warsh next week, potentially. We'll see what that shift looks like for the Fed. So it's an interesting time, obviously, to have transition of leadership, but also some of those uncertainties that are sitting out there with regards to the health of the economy versus inflation. And those two things, if you think about it, really strike directly the Fed's dual mandate of that labor market stability and inflation. And that's really going to be central for the Fed's decision.
How is it affecting your decisions as a money manager? Because as we watched the economy get better, and we watched inflation get closer to a 2% target, even if it wasn't getting there, we had investors who were a heck of a lot happier in fixed income than they'd been not that long ago when, you know, we were zero interest rates for a long time. Now, well, the rates aren't terrible, but inflation means that real returns are. How does that impact where we're seeing the money flow and what investors should expect?
I think the good thing for investors is that yields are attractive. If you look across fixed income, yields are attractive. It was a pretty good year for the bond market in 2025. And what we've seen here so far in 2026 is we saw yields come up, particularly in the month of March. with the Iran conflict, there was a pretty sharp move up in yields. You saw the 10-year treasury move north of 4.25% after having been down near that 4 and sub 4% range. These slightly higher yields still put a pretty good level of income in investors' pockets, and we think that's an attractive thing for investors. There is some volatility there as well. And, you know, from our vantage point, we're active investors. So when volatility arrives, it can be the friend of us as an investor. Certainly there's some discomfort that can come along the way, but we think it does provide opportunities for investors as well. The biggest thing that I think we have to kind of grapple with is what is short-term and what is long-term on the inflation front. Right now, the market is telling us this is more of a short-term move in inflation. And while inflation, generally speaking, if you look at the PCE indicator, which is the Fed's preferred measure, is not quite down to that 2% target they'd like, it has made progress down toward that target. What we've seen, though, is short-term indicators for inflation have gone up, but the long-term indicators for inflation haven't moved that much. And that's a good thing, because as a bond investor, we all know that inflation is kryptonite for bonds. And the Fed's diligence to keep inflation under control, which they've done historically, is really important for bond investors to continue to capture that income here month in and month out.
But in your role, one of the things you are trying to do is read the tea leaves on inflation. The market is still saying, as you pointed out, longer term inflation will settle back down. But every day that it doesn't, and that we get a little closer to, have we gotten a little closer to the long term, somebody's starting to think that maybe this will be here longer, or maybe it won't be just oil prices, it'll be the impact of fertilizer or some of those other sorts of things. How much time do we have before the market changes its mind about that longer-term inflation market? And what is that going to do for a manager to you, like you? Because I'd imagine right now, that is the most important call you have to make.
Yeah. Well, across the complex here at Baird, we manage our mutual funds duration neutral. So we take out, relative to our benchmark, having to make a big call on interest rate risk. We think that's liberating. It allows us to focus our efforts on the ratings profile of what we're buying, some of the subsectors of what we buy, and some of the individual securities that we purchase. We do certainly have confidence in the Fed, whether if it's Chair Powell or potentially Chair Warsh, to keep inflation central to the mandate of the Fed, and obviously to go through and keep inflation under a low level and keep inflation down at a target that we think is appropriate. In the meanwhile, though, again, coming back to the higher yields, income is very attractive for investors to wait through this process. We don't think there's enough right now that gets inflation out of hand for the Fed. Sure, gasoline has gone over $4 a gallon, and we've seen that the 30-year mortgage rate, when it had come down a little bit, we saw some hints of affordability, has moved back north of 6%. We still think that inflation is not a persistent problem like what we saw during the pandemic, which was obviously a multi-month recurring issue for everyday citizens buying all sorts of goods. In the meanwhile, fixed income investors do get that income, and we think the income is it's satisfactory right now. It's compensating investors for the fact that inflation is sitting slightly above what the Fed is hoping for and trying to achieve.
An area that is not necessarily central to what Baird does has been in the news a lot, that being private credit. And credit markets are central to what you do. I haven't asked this question to anybody else. I've spent plenty of time talking about private credit. But is there a bleed from what's happening in private credit to other markets? And is it making certain things more or less attractive if that exists? Or the private credit markets are private credit markets and the public credit markets just aren't worrying about it?
I think there's always a relationship between financial markets, because investors are always making comparative decisions on where money gets invested. And there can certainly be relationships and correlations that exist. Now, we're operating in public markets, But there are some of the investments that we make where those companies or those entities have, you know, they have exposures or they have business models that involve them in private credit or private equity or other types of investments. What we think we're seeing right now is not necessarily a fundamental strain. It's more of a liquidity strain. There appears to be a mismatch on liquidity profile and demands versus investor expectations. And that's caused some of these headlines that we've seen where, in particular, investors are trying to receive cash out of certain investments and potentially it's not coming at the level they'd hoped. And maybe more investors seek out cash because they suddenly have a concern that it might not be available. For us, our investors can get daily liquidity in our vehicles. We run highly liquid strategies for our investors. So we're monitoring this. We're monitoring the knock-on effects. But in some ways, there is an isolation or there's a difference between what we're doing on a day-to-day basis and what's happening in some of those other areas of the market. The one thing I do want to underscore, though, is when we look at fundamentals, whether if it's in the municipal market or in the corporate credit market, we think fundamentals still look very good. They have been in a good spot. They've come down off of their peak, but fundamentals are good. So this is not the type of credit situation that's a credit concern of fundamental strength. It's more of a, was there a mismatch of communication on the liquidity profile of a strategy being offered to an investor or an investor feeling that they want to access funds and maybe they couldn't? That's a liquidity item. That's something different than a fundamental concern, which we certainly don't have right now.
Is there or are there areas of the credit market that you particularly like right now, either because of how they're positioned or the industry? And are there areas that you are avoiding right now because maybe they're being swept up a little bit on the headlines, et cetera? And there, I guess I'm referring potentially to more of the corporate stuff.
Yeah, I think within the corporate market, one of the areas that we've had a long time overweight in is bank and finance. And we think that some of the big financial institutions are still on very sound footing. They obviously have business models that have gone through credit stress and have built reserves and have strengthened the balance sheet in a way that we think provide them tremendous fundamental strength. But as you get later in a credit cycle, you know, we've been in a period where spreads widened briefly during the pandemic, and then we've seen spreads gravitate tighter over the last few years. With spreads in the tighter end of the range, we do think that increasingly investors need to be much more selective with where they invest. Looking broadly into, let's say, the municipal market as well, that's another area that we think has tremendous fundamental strength, but it's one where, again, later in the credit cycle, we're coming down off of peak credit or its healthiest point. We think investors there, again, need to be a little bit more selective because we've seen certain issuers show some initial signs of weakness might be a strong term, but we've seen some softening in their fundamentals in recent months.
As for credit markets and what everybody has been looking at, you know, we've just gotten through tax time. That doesn't mean that everybody has necessarily filed. There are a few extensions out there and what have you. But I'm curious, as you look for how you can better serve investors, et cetera, you know, there's a lot of talk about, hey, people are paying less in taxes, big, beautiful bill, cut down tax bills and what have you. Does it change at all investors' sweet spots when it comes to, you know, do I want to own more tax advantage bonds? Does any of that have a fallout that nobody's discussed? Or is that me just extrapolating that, like, hey, if this is happening, it might have a fallout over there?
Right now, when absolute yields move up, and if you look at where tax rates sit, there's a great story for the tax advantage of municipals. Right now, the pickup is tremendous. So we like that pickup. You know, if you think about a strategy where if your fund yields north of 4%, you're probably talking somewhere in the neighborhood of 7% on a taxable equivalent basis. That's a tremendous pickup in yield, if you will, that you get from the tax benefit. Interestingly, as we get through tax time, everybody's thinking about their 1040. It's curious to watch what's happening across the country. You have some corners of the U.S. that are really focused on tax reductions, getting rid of the income tax, curbing property tax. You have other parts of the country that have really been focused on, can we create certain types of higher level tax brackets, potentially a wealth tax? You've even seen places that hadn't had an income tax look to introduce one. So investors always need to be thinking about that tax adjusted situation for their bottom line. And April's always the best time to do it, especially today we're recording this on April 15th. And as people file their taxes, it's certainly going to be front of mind. For investors in lower tax brackets, let's say if you're 21% or lower, I think that decision becomes a little bit different. You know, you could potentially look at combinations of different markets and combinations of different strategies that give you the best tax-adjusted income. Certainly, the aggregate U.S. bond market right now offers a tremendous amount of income as well. And if you think about retirement accounts, if you think about lower income tax bracket payers, those would be strategies that would certainly be appropriate.
As we look forward towards the rest of this year, given what we've said about the Fed and what we've said about interest rates and the uncertainty we've got over geopolitical events and all the rest, if you and I were to talk again in 6 months, would we be looking at what you think will be a status quo? A lot of headlines, a lot of noise, but not much change? Or will we get to the end of this year and go, wow, you know, when we sat there on tax day, we certainly couldn't have expected that this was where inflation and rates and whatever we're going to get to?
It's always hard to say what the future looks like. I think the one thing that is certain is volatility will come in bouts. And what we saw in the month of March was volatility reared its head and uncertainty came from something investors weren't expecting. There may be more of that in 2026. We don't know that. It's a great backdrop for active investment. We do think these periods where spread volatility presents itself, investors need to think about how can they opportunistically lean into that. And we try to do that within our strategies. Similarly, when the yield curve changes shape dramatically because of differing views of the pace of Fed easing or potentially tightening, how can investors lean into that? And I think that's really important in fixed income, where you're not talking about dramatic moves in price. Income is the primary story, and you have to look at price adjustments along the way and how you can lean into those smaller price adjustments, those air pockets that come, especially in a midterm election year, and use those to your advantage as an investor to maximize both income and total return as well. So more to come, I'm sure, but I will tell you that as an investor, an active investor in fixed income, it's a very exciting market. And to have these yields, to see the issuance that we've seen in the U.S. corporate market and in the municipal market, we've seen a lot of activity in the securitized market as well, both non-agency mortgages as well as certainly what's happened in the agency mortgage market. These provide opportunities for investors and what we view as a high-quality part of the U.S. investment market, high-quality fixed income.
Gabe, great stuff. I appreciate the time and the thoughtful answers. Hopefully, we will get a chance to do one of those conversations down the line as we watch it all play out.
Thanks for having me, Chuck. Appreciate it.
That's Gabe Diedrich. He's portfolio manager at Baird. BairdAssetManagement.com is the website if you want to learn more about him, the firm, their funds, and more. And we'll be back to put a bow on this show, so stick with us. We'll cross the finish line together right after this message.